Hey, this is Jen Johans at FilmIntuition.com and Film Intuition on social media and Letterboxd. And this is Watch with Jen. Up first, we have a good friend of mine, Vulture's phenomenal TV critic, Roxana Hadadi, who is also a Peabody Awards juror and the Criterion essayist for The Sound of Metal release. Well, I am back with one of my favorite people, Roxana Hadadi. And Roxana, I know that you're a fan of Anora, and I am too. So before we dive in, though, how are you doing and what's new with you?
Thank you for asking, Jen. So nice to see your face. What is new with me? Same old, you know, same old watching television, writing about it, same old catching the intermittent movie every so often and writing about it. Things are good in my life. We're about to start our garden boxes again. So I'm trying to figure out what we want to plant for this year. Yeah, I think we're trying to do this thing where we put all of our energy into the yard and the garden because everything is terrible. So
you might as well have something beautiful. Yes.
We might as well have something beautiful. So we, unfortunately, our fig tree, which I got a lot of joy out of last year, died over the winter.
Okay.
So that was like very tragic. So we bought a more like cold resilient fig bush, which is interesting. Ooh. I didn't know that there
I had
is
no
a
idea.
Fig. Yeah, who knew? So we bought that and we also bought a quince bush.
Okay.
So I'm hoping for like some solid fruit over the summer. And I think we're also going to do our whole like habanero, ghost pepper, crazy peppers, and then do hot sauce this summer as well. So I don't know, Jen, taking it a day at a time. What about you?
I am doing well. Yeah.
Good.
I think everything is way too hot to grow in Phoenix in the summer. We're already getting back in the 100s. And, so it's bananas, but, I had a bonsai tree. It was like my pride and joy, but you know, we had to see other people bonsai, you know, hit the road. But, yeah. So I love paying attention to your garden and following that on Instagram.
Thank you.
Yes, on the gram.
Thank you.
I don't really know how to work Instagram. I still use it like Twitter and post too much
Same.
On the grid. Whereas like the cool people post like once every 6 months and then put a lot of stories about nonsense. And I'm like, I don't know. Yeah.
People do like 20 stories a day. And
that's just a lot. Yeah.
It's a lot, and they're like very good at it, and they do things in
Some
these
people
stories
are,
that
oh
I
my
don't
God.
even know how to do on the internet.
It's so much content. Yeah, people
It's
are like
so
making
much.
videos and
Yes. Collages, like specific needle drops, all of the stuff that I'm like, this is amazing, and I am entertained by you doing it, and I can't do it myself. I don't. Also, Jen, my life is not that interesting, and people lead some really interesting lives that sort of can generate these stories. I don't have that. I
Oh,
don't
me
have that going
neither.
on.
No,
Yeah.
I don't have the time. I mean, they have the skills, right? Because like,
Yeah.
if I tried to do one of those, it would take me 6 weeks. So yeah.
Jen, you have a million other things going on too. Like you're
I
doing
do.
this.
Yeah. My joke at work, I run the Blue Sky account for Poison Pen. And so my joke at work is they're like, Jen, can you do the TikTok? I'm too old for TikTok. Like
I'm too
that
old for
is
TikTok. No.
Beyond my skills. Yes.
No. No.
People who can
It
do
is.
that are amazing to me, but nope.
Yeah. Is there anyone at work who is into like book talk that you could like feature so that it doesn't have to be you?
Oh yeah, we do have
Yeah.
somebody younger, but she's busy with grad school, so they were like, do you want to? But I'm like, she's of the age, she knows how to do Canva, and she's, you know, very skilled at all these. That's the thing I need to learn. I'm actually going to learn Canva and WordPress and two Adobe programs over the next few months because I'm going to start
Nice.
doing some editing for the store. But yeah, so that's where I'm putting my energies. But
That's
yeah,
awesome.
hey, if
I
I
love that.
start making 20 stories a day, either maybe do an intervention or be like, Jen, are you spending all of your time doing this? Because, yeah.
Jen, are you reading books for
Yes.
work or are
Yeah.
you just doing
Making
Instagram
stories.
stories?
Yeah. Oh my
I love
gosh.
that. But yeah, look, I do know book talk is allegedly like a huge thing. So I feel like it is,
Yes.
so like I appreciate that you are like doing other stuff to also be well versed in this space. But then like book talk can also just like exist on its own in
Yeah.
another realm.
It's another realm, and we get people who come in because of it all of the
Oh,
time.
wow.
We had like a subscription only or a ticketed event with a romance author who's huge on book talk, and we had like 115 people.
That's awesome.
And so the store was packed. We had to like close the store, and I was in charge of, I was the girl they would hand the camera to and snap a photo of their with their phone of them with the author. But there were so many that the author couldn't really stop signing. She was doing 5 books a person and posts. So
Wow.
these were really bizarre photos where like the girl would be actively posing and the author is just like signing away. So I don't know how great those photos were, but I'm sure they'd made some great stories and book talks with them.
Yes. Yes. And I'm sure the people were still like grateful for you being there to take them and like be that person. But damn, I mean, that's awesome. But see, and this is like what's so fascinating is like I just think of book talk as like this nebulous thing, but I love that you're like experiencing the actual impact of it. It has an actual impact. That's awesome.
Yesterday I was forwarded an email again by somebody who had gone to one of our events, and I took a photo of everyone holding up the book, and she wanted it for social media, and so she wrote into the store. She's like, I don't know who took the picture. She was tall, pretty, with long hair. Does she work for you or does she work for the author? And so they were forwarding me like, Jen, you're getting talked about for taking these photos.
You have to add that onto some social media descriptor. Tall, pretty, works at the bookstore.
Takes weird photos with camera for your beautiful Instagram and book talk.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I love that. But yes, yeah, so I've been okay. I was looking forward to this very much because I feel like the movie that we're going to talk about now in my mind is linked entirely with you. So I'm very glad that we get to talk about it together.
For those who don't know or don't really follow me on social media, I saw Anora in one of the worst weeks like ever. A situationship, I guess we can call it, exploded. It had already died in a tragic, bizarre way. And then that week it was just made Technicolor and incredibly public and horrifyingly sad. And I'd been kind of numb. And I'm one of those people, like, if you ask me how I'm doing, I'm like, oh, I'm good. I'm good.
Yes.
And so I'd been putting on a front, and then I watched Anora. It was also a really bad week because, like, the car died, and that was like a couple thousand. I developed COVID pneumonia. My computer died the next week. So it was just like a hilarious, multiplication of events. And then I saw Anora, and it starts out, and it's bubblegum and it's sweet and it's how everybody feels when they meet somebody and they want to believe the beautiful things they say. And then the second half is the wake up call. And
Yeah.
so when that hit, even though I have like nothing in common with these characters at all, and they couldn't, the whole thing couldn't be further from what I had gone through, it definitely hit me hard. And I wrote an essay and it went viral. And like, I should be super embarrassed, but I started to hear from people around the world. And so everyone was very supportive, and that's nice.
Jen, why would you be super embarrassed?
Well, because you're writing about heartbreak and
I know, but I don't think there's anything embarrassing about that. I think that that piece resonated with so many people because it was so brave and I think very to the point about what you had experienced in a way that a lot of people could relate to. And I was surprised as well by the fact that you said that a lot of men related to it, right? Like you got
Oh
a
my
lot of
gosh.
male comments.
I got a letter from so many guys were the ones reaching out, and they were like, I was reading and it was cool. You were comparing it to Demi and Fellini and Wilder, and then you got to the personal stuff and I started crying. And so I heard from a few guys saying that it made them cry, think about their relationships, being on both sides of it, and think maybe how they had treated people in the past and how they'd been treated themselves, and what we owe each other and respect and dignity. And that was really nice. I got asked out by some people as far away as like I don't live in Michigan, but that was nice.
Yes, I do remember you telling me that there were also some guys that were like, fuck that guy, I'll take you out.
Yes. Yeah, that was really funny. One was from, I remember one was from England, and one was from New Zealand. And, yeah, there were a couple others like, well, if I'm ever in your neck of the woods, and I'm like, oh, Jesus, no. But it was nice that so many people did relate to it. Yeah.
Good. Yeah, it's like I'm not actually trying to make this like an Anora situation with a new guy,
Yeah,
but thank you
no.
so much for your interest and for reading the
Yes.
essay.
Yes,
I
thank you. Well,
love
let's not get
that.
weird. Yeah.
Yeah, let's not get weird. This is
Yeah.
purely a creative outlet appreciation. But no, like, and so that's why, like, I think your essay really got at so much of what I was feeling about the film. And I also think so much of what other people related to, which is that underneath this, like, sort of farce exterior, there
Yeah.
is very much like a question of like, what does it look like to be loved, I think.
Yeah.
Like, how do we sort of express love? And is it always a transaction, or is there any way that it can be something more organic than that? So I think that was like very important. And I also think just for in terms of like what I appreciate so much about this film is like I love the nebulous, ambiguous ending. And I think it's one of those that is gonna, it has stuck with me because I keep thinking about like different ways to interpret it. And I do
Yes.
think that it is, it's so interesting because mostly I get very irritated with these sorts of endings. Like I think about something like in a completely different genre space, like the ending of Inception drives me a little bit crazy, Jen, because I'm like,
Okay.
what is happening with this spinning top? I'm angry that all of this could have potentially been a dream. I get very frustrated with that sort of thing. But I felt like Anora, because like, this final scene between the two of them in the car is so fraught and it's so raw. And it's like, is she crying because she's overwhelmed with emotion because she realizes that she feels something now for this man? Is it like pity for herself? Is it just the exhaustion of what she's been through? Like, I love that there's so many different emotional readings of that scene rather than like a logistical reading of that scene because like they're in a car. We're seeing what's happening. But what she is feeling, I think, is so simultaneously visible to us and also closed off from us. And I'm really impressed that the film was able to like thread that line and like end us in a place where we really have to think about what's going to happen to these characters. And I also love that like the cast members also refuse to be definitive. Like every time someone has asked them, because I had the opportunity to talk to Yura Borisov, which was pretty cool. And he also was like, no, he's like, I'm not going to tell you what I'm
Oh, it would be different for everyone. Yeah. And that's what's important, I think, is the ability, the universality of this film that starts out extremely specifically, in a gentleman's club, and you're thinking, I'm not going to relate to anything about these characters. And then by the end, yeah, we've kind of all gone through it. I think a lot of times with, your saddest moments or your happiest moments, there's other things mixed in. And so I think that's what is so beautiful about this movie. It's kind of like a Cassavetes thing a little bit. Like it's there's sadness and happiness. I think it is the exhaustion and like her finally having to face what she had just been through, but also knowing she's with somebody who actually sees her and has her back. That's scary.
I think that's a great way to put it. It's scary because it's like, can I trust this? Because I thought that I could trust
The
this
last
man
one.
who was my husband. And he turned out to be like a fucking child. Or should I trust this man who is older, has seemingly lived more of a life? Like, is he someone that I could rely on? So yeah, I definitely think that there is a lot of that there. I'm very curious about your, like, class read on this film, because I feel like that was also like a very sort of fascinating secondary conversation that happened, like all films, right? It was like Anora had like a big pop out of the festivals. Then it felt like it sort of fell out of attention as we got closer to like the awards race, right? Then it got nominated for like a bunch of Oscars. And then in the space between nomination and to my surprise, winning a bunch of Oscars, I feel like there was sort of this like interesting backlash from some people within like the sex work community, some people who were giving it like a classist read. So I was wondering if you had thoughts on that. Like, because it was difficult for me to parse through because I think Sean Baker to me seems like he has a very distinct, anti-rich agenda.
Oh yeah, for sure.
So it was interesting to read sort of like a classist take that was like critical of that. So yeah, I'm curious what you thought.
Yeah, my friend Krista Faust, who is an author and she's a former dominatrix and sex worker, I did an event with her at Poison Pen in April and she brought up my essay in Anora because somebody asked and she was excited because of my essay to see the movie, but had a completely opposite read on it. She really had a
Fascinating.
problem with it and thought it was like, I think a Cinderella thing, and like she didn't like the way the camera was always on her ass, and she had a lot of, some really valid thoughts. And everyone is going to see a different movie, but that recording, if you're curious, you're listening, is on YouTube, so you can watch our conversation and hear Krista sound off on Anora, which is very interesting. The class thing I get. I don't like it sometimes when I feel like North Country, when I feel like filmmakers are almost doing torture porn or grief porn or gore porn. And I will say that sometimes with Sean Baker, I do feel that a little bit. Like Florida Project and some of his other, I love Florida Project, but if you start looking at that and then Red Rocket, and then there is something about maybe I don't want to say using the other class or whatever, because I think his intentions are pure, but I do think that there is something interesting. This almost feels like a continuation of Florida Project, in like one of these girls could have grown up, gone to New York, become Annie, played by Mikey Madison, whose character even wants to go to Disney World. And she also has a mom who lives in Miami. So she's got links right to Florida. So it almost feels like this is a direct link, like a continuation of that same universe. So I get that. Yeah. I also appreciated the idea of the way it treated class because her husband has so much money and she has so little and she's sharing a place. And I think again, that aspect, I was with somebody who is much more well-to-do than I was, or I was involved in a thing with this person. And so when they would talk about like wanting to take me around the world or, like, oh, do you have a passport or let's go. And it's like, yeah, but I wouldn't have had the dough to go. And I mean, it never really got that far, but and then what happened is he asked about the passport again, and then like a few weeks later met somebody out of town, another brunette, About my age, same thing, and immediately takes this person with him, and that sucked. So the week I saw Nora, there was a photo up on Instagram, and I just talked to him like a few days before, didn't mention he was going there. So that was fun. But I think the class thing is a valid issue with Sean Baker, but I do think his heart is in the right place.
Yeah, I think that that is a really good way to put it because I sort of feel the same sense of, I don't know if I would go as far as to say it's like poverty porny,
Yeah,
but I
no,
think that
but
he,
yeah.
but I think that he wants to emphasize it's like, I'm being inarticulate in saying it this way, but I think to a certain degree, it's like, look at this shit. Like, look
Yes,
at what
yes.
people
That's a good
have to
way of
go
putting it.
through. Yeah, like you probably as the viewer are not
Yeah.
living like this. And
No,
so
no.
I have to overemphasize to you what
Yeah.
it is like, you know? And so yeah, like I do feel like sometimes there is a little bit of hyperbole because he thinks that that's what the audience needs to like understand the
Yeah.
difficulties of living this way in this country. But ultimately, I agree with you. I feel like it comes from, for me, a place of like sympathy rather than exploitation.
Yes, it's
You
walking
know?
a tightrope, and so I can see both sides, but I don't tend to think that's no, I don't think he's I don't think he's cynical about it. No.
And I also think the thing, and I saw some chatter about this, but it's almost more interesting to me, is I feel like he's made these really interesting portraits of like America from like a domestic internal sort of perspective. And I loved that this film sort of captures the tension of growing up as a like second generation immigrant kid in America and then being in a relationship with someone who is an actual immigrant and has like a totally different perspective on the country. Like I think that tension was almost the more fascinating part for me. Like putting aside the like sex worker thing, the Cinderella thing, like I think of that sort of navigation of, and I see this sometimes in myself as well. Like I am ethnically Iranian, but like grew up in this country, was born here, I'm a citizen of this country. But then you meet people who are like immigrants now, and it's like, oh, we have totally different
Oh yeah.
perspectives on like what we want out of America or like living here. And so that I loved that sort of like conflict in the
Yes.
film. And that felt new for me.
How some of them wanted to use different nicknames, or they don't want to, they're embarrassed, or she doesn't want to speak Russian, or you can see some of that. I thought that was really interesting. Like he's privileged enough, yeah, there's a lot to that. I'm glad you brought up the immigrant thing too.
Yeah, like I love that aspect of it. But overall, I think I'm just like, I'm still impressed and pleased that this won so many Oscars. Like, I don't know what that says now about the voting body, but I do think that that is inevitably like a step forward for independent film. And I also think, and this goes back to like our talking about the ending, it seems to be the film that I've had the most conversations with people where we have all gotten sort of different experiences out of it. Like the first time that I saw it was at the Middleburg Film Festival, which is in like Horse Country, Virginia. Very sort of like wealthy, well-to-do audience. And they really, it seemed to me being in that audience with them, they really treated it strictly as like a comedy. Like they loved the house break-in
It was
scene.
weird for me to hear like the people who just think of the movie as, oh my God, it's 100% screwball. And you're like, what the fuck?
Like people were just like laughing it up. loving it. And then I
Yeah.
think the end got very like sobering for people where it's like, oh no, this is doing something different tonally. So it was really interesting eavesdropping on some of those conversations and hearing like, what did people think of Annie? Like, how did they react to her? And then in the months to come, I definitely feel like that was the one where sometimes I would talk to people who were like, 100%, it's just a comedy and the ending feels weird to me because I don't think it fits with the rest of the film. You have other people who I think are maybe more in line with us, where you're like, yeah, there are screwball elements. The home invasion is sort of played for laughs, but ultimately it is like she's being held hostage.
I know. You know
And
what's
that's
funny?
scary.
I did not. I laughed at the men's reaction a little bit. Like, I don't want to tie her up, but overall, that was not funny at all. I caught somebody trying to break into my house. Like, I know what that's like. And I think every woman has had experiences. And, so you completely get, like, these men are coming in, they're going to grab, I gotta. She doesn't know if she's going to be raped, killed, whatever, and she's fighting for her life. And so it's a little weird how carefree everyone just thought the entire thing was funny. And I was like, not really.
Yeah, not really. And I don't think that that is, again, I don't think that's necessarily a flaw of the film. I think it
Oh,
is,
no.
it's purposefully sort of lulling you into that, right? I think it is playing with our expectations of like, look at how zany all this is. But I do really think that like everything involving Igor is like the heart of the movie is
Oh my
like,
God, I love Igor.
love Igor. Like him absorbing what they're doing to her is to me like you want the emotional through line of the film. Like if for some reason you can't find it in Annie, like it is within him, right? But yeah, like I don't know. I think I've just grown to appreciate the film overall like more and more in the time since I've seen it.
It played much better. I was able to laugh a little bit more the second viewing. The first viewing, it does kind of leave you shell-shocked in places, which it's going to. And I love what you said about Igor, and because I think that's the thing about love too, is the way we are reflected back to ourselves. And he is the one who can actually see who she is for who she is. And I think that that's what's so scary is she knows like there's no artifice there. Like she doesn't have to put on an act. She tries to put on an act a few times with him and he knows that isn't her. And so it's interesting. And the way that like on the plane and before the plane, like with the mom, like he is there to witness the most devastating moments, and he's the one who's like, she deserves an apology. And he's got everything to lose because you get the impression he takes care of his grandmother, and like he's in a bind too. She lives with family, he lives with family, same thing.
There's such a like adjacency there. And I also think what I love isn't just that he sees her, although he does. He's the only person I think who sees her in this film, but he also sees what other people do to her, which I think ultimately is more devastating to Annie than just like her own lack of artifice to him. I think there is like a real devastation in the fact that he sees her be pushed around, insulted, abandoned, right? Like he's also seen like seemingly some of the worst things in her life happen to her. And so I think there is also this like very lingering sense of humiliation that she otherwise does not have in her life, but this man has seen it all. So it's also like, can you be emotionally intimate with someone who saw all these terrible things happen to you, was involved in all of these terrible things happening to you? Like, I don't know. But I feel like that's also a question that the film leaves us with is like, can you have like genuine love or affection for someone who got to see all of that about you without your permission? I don't know, but
That's what's
I have,
hard.
that's hard too.
Like, how are you going to overcome that? Like, the trust and the, I mean, you can't really help how you meet people or when, but yeah, that's a hurdle. And I think he's never being cutesy about it too, which I appreciate.
That's
It isn't
true.
like Gross Point Blank or something where they're cracking jokes while he's killing people. It's not, which I love that movie, but this is not
It's
that.
tonally, right, it's tonally a completely different thing. Like, she, to a certain degree, is always going to be sarcastic because that's the person she is. And I did laugh. I think I laughed the most when he is destroying the like ice cream candy store. Just because he himself, it's so, again, like absurd and surreal, but he himself seems completely bored doing it. Like, oh, this is just like another day on the job. I have to scare this old man by destroying his shop.
I mean, they're both performing, right? That's what they do. Performing and playing a part for people with money or people's
For their
amusement.
employers. Yeah, exactly. I mean, they fundamentally are employees, right? And I think the movie does not let you forget that. And it does in that way. It really felt to me in some ways sort of like a spiritual successor to what like Michael Mann's films do in terms of always reminding you that for the most part, his protagonists are working for someone else
Yeah, that's my money in your pocket.
And frustrated by the experience of working with someone else. So it's like, I wouldn't necessarily call Anora like Marxist, I do think not Marxist in the way that Thief is Marxist, but I think it shares a similar sort of like within all of your different identities as a person, does employee always end up being number one because of the country in which we live? Is there any way that your like list of needs or your list of ways that you define yourself, could anything go above employee? And I don't think Anora like has an answer for that necessarily, but it wants you to be wondering about it.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I love the movie. I love the performances. I really love the Godfather character, the Armenian. I think he, the second viewing, I was like, this guy kind of walks away with a lot of scenes. He's great.
Yes. And he is like Baker's most recurring collaborator, right? Is it Karen Karagoulian? Yeah, he's great. I think he's been in all of Baker's movies. I love how much he and the actor who plays, I believe it's his brother, right? Are just like constantly talking shit in Armenian.
It's so funny.
Yes, I love that. But yeah, it's the kind of movie where every performance has like some really distinct standout moments. It's very generous in that way, I think. And it does, like you said, like lend itself to repeat viewing because I think you'll pick up on like the little nuances of each performance a little bit more each time. And it's on Criterion, so people don't have an excuse not to get it. It's a Criterion. Just get it. Get the Criterion.
Brand new disc. Hello, gorgeous. And I think the title kind of says it all too, calling her Anora instead of Annie, and seeing who people are. He's Russian, they're Armenian, so it's about being true to yourself. So I'm glad to have talked about it with you. We
Me
encourage you to
too,
pick
Jen.
this up for sure. And I think it's also, it's streaming, so you guys watch it, buy the disc. Come on. You're listening to a physical media episode. That's what we're here for. But Roxanne, I want to thank you so much for doing this. You have to come
Thank
back
you,
again.
Jen.
Of
Of course,
course.
always, always. Thank you so much for having me on.
Well, I am thrilled to have back my good friend William Boyle, hot off his sensational conversation that he just had in Texas at the Southwest Review, the Frontera Festival with Megan Abbott, where they played Blood Simple and talked about it. Can you tell me how that went?
Wow, it was great. It was a lot of fun. I mean, that they do such a wonderful job with that festival, and so they had some great bands there, Paranoid Style, Carly from Wednesday, and a bunch of cool people. And Meg and I just got to, talk about Blood Simple for a little while, and then we screened it, and in the Texas Theater, which is a an incredible venue, and people kind of were a lot of people, I was surprised, a lot of people who were seeing it for the first time. So, it was cool to be kind of, me and Megan were the people that they wanted to talk to about it afterwards, when we were out at the kind of other events and the kind of closing event. So it was really a lot of fun. And, Megan's just the best. And, we kind of historically love talking about the Coen brothers. And that's, just a wonderful, wonderful way to spend some time.
Yeah. So people who had not seen it, which sequences kind of did you notice like everyone freaking out the most in?
I mean, I think, I think just over, like the overall vibe of it. I mean, I think, definitely, I'm trying to think if there, we were kind of sitting up close. I think we were sitting in like the row. I didn't know this till Megan said it, but I think we were sitting like in the row in the theater where Oswald was apprehended.
Yes, I heard that. Yeah.
And so the crowd was mostly behind us, so I wasn't really seeing like reaction during the screening. More, I was talking to people after, and I mean, I think a lot of people were struck by like the silent sequences,
Yeah.
the burial kind of scene, and of course the last kind of shooting through
Oh
the
my
wall
gosh, I
scene.
know.
I mean, there's so much stuff. It's a movie that I've loved for basically my whole life. I mean, I saw it, I think, first when I was 12 or 13, and never really fails to surprise me and just kind of gets better with every viewing. So,
Plays like gangbusters too.
yeah, it
Yeah.
really does. And I think, I mean, a lot of people of a certain age, I mean, I think pretty much I feel like everybody has some grasp of the Coen brothers. They've seen some stuff, certainly, but
Yeah.
a lot of people, even like pretty serious movie fans, I feel like still that's one of those movies that kind of has slipped through the cracks for some people somehow, and they're always kind of blown, blown away by it.
Yeah, it's kind of perfect actually, because I think Blood Simple was 1984, if
Yeah.
memory serves, and that's
Well, yeah,
exactly the
84,
same.
80, 85. I mean,
Yeah,
84
right
or
around there.
85 is when it came out like wider, but yeah.
Yeah, and that's exactly the same time frame of American independent filmmaking that we're
Yeah.
talking about with Choose Me and Alan Rudolph.
Yeah.
So talk to me about this one. I had only seen it, I think, once on video in the 90s. Alan Rudolph goes hot and cold for me. I like some of his stuff, some of it not so much. So this, it felt like in first watch, some little snippets of it, some of the shots of like Leslie Ann Warren and on the phone, and some of the visuals actually came back, but I didn't remember anything concrete at all. So it's, yeah, it kind of feels like a weird Midsummer's Night's Dream. Like you can see Hartley, kind of was probably a big fan. So, yeah, what's your relationship to this one?
Oh man, I love it so much. I love Alan Rudolph. I mean, he's become, especially in the last, I'd say in the last decade or so, probably one of my greatest artistic heroes. I definitely had some exposure to him early on. I think, and probably, we talked on a previous episode about Mrs. Parker and the Vicious Circle, which with Jennifer Jason Leigh.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's probably the first Alan Rudolph movie I saw, and then Mortal Thoughts also came out around that time, and that was probably another one that I saw early and really liked, but probably like I missed all the earlier stuff. I was a big Altman guy from
Yeah.
a young age, so I knew Alan Rudolph's association with Altman, but a lot of Alan Rudolph's movies were kind of, and still are, some of them difficult to see for a while, and kind of either never got physical releases or got them kind of, and they disappeared. But so those two movies were early, probably my earliest exposure to them. And then I think at some point, probably about 10 or 11 years ago, I really just kind of I can't remember what the order of things was, but I certainly saw, Choose Me, Trouble in Mind, Remember My Name, and in kind of quick succession. And I was like, man, this is my guy. This is, I think he's one of those filmmakers that you're either on his wavelength or you're not. And I'm very much on his wavelength. Yeah, I love this movie very much, and I love a lot of his movies. This and Remember My Name are probably my favorites. But I love the 90s stuff, Afterglow. I haven't seen Breakfast of Champions in a long time, and I know that's kind of back out on the circuit right now with a restoration. I like the stuff that nobody else likes. I like Trixie a lot. I
I did
like,
too, yeah.
I mean, I'm blank. And then he's got, The Moderns is great. I mean, he's got a whole bunch of films I really love, and including, he went a long time without making a film after, I think, The Secret Lives of Dentists was like his last. It was 2002, and then between that and his last film, Raimi Telein, which I love a lot, with Keith Carradine and Sandra Locke and Samantha Mathis and Jennifer Tilly. That came out in, I think, 2016, and I think it'll probably be his last movie. It doesn't seem like he is going to make another one. So he's somebody who, I've kind of, I'm always kind of in conversation with his works. He's had a big influence on the way I love to tell stories. And I mean, I think, Choose Me is kind of a perfect example of that, because he's one of these, he's a director and storyteller who has this kind of this offbeat tone that I really admire. And it's like I think in the early promotional materials for Choose Me, he called it a serious comedy, which I really, and he's always kind of walking that line. There's a noirish element to it. I mean, of course, it's kind of like a very romantic film in its way. I think, Paul, it was Pauline Kael, and her review of it talked about how it looked a lot like an Edward Hopper painting or a Reginald Marsh painting. So it's got that kind of like neon, dreaminess. And I mean, he calls all of his movies, or a lot of his movies anyway, fables, and it's got that quality about it. It's kind of noir fable. So I fell for it right away. I've seen it probably a handful of times now, I guess 5 or 6 times. And I just rewatched it last night in the new Criterion 4K, and it looks as gorgeous as ever. And yeah, I mean, I could just ramble on about it forever. I love the cast. I love Keith Carradine and pretty much everything. And I think this is maybe him at his best. I love and have forever had a crush on Leslie Ann Warren. I love Genevieve Bujold. I love Ray Don Chung. It's a great cast. I've been kind of revisiting a lot of the. There's a couple of extras on the Criterion release, and then I've been going back and watching some other stuff that's online. That's like, Q&As from recent screenings of it, and listening to him talk about just kind of the making of it and how it came to be. And it's incredible. I mean, it was a really small budget. It was like, I think, $800,000 budget or something. And I don't think they even had a story in the beginning. They just had like Teddy Pendergrass's song. And I think it started because somebody asked him to make a music video for the Teddy Pendergrass song Choose Me, and Alan Rudolph was like, I'm not really interested in making a music video, but they were going to give him this much money for the music video. And he's like, but I'll make a feature for the same budget, basically. And so that was kind of the starting point. And he talked to Keith Carradine, and Keith Carradine signed on without, any sense of what it was even going to be. And Alan Rudolph said something like, well, who do you want to, what do you want your character to be? And Keith Carradine was just kind of like, oh, I wanted to just be the kind of guy they never let me play. So that was kind of the starting point of it. And yeah, I mean, it's a movie that gets another movie that gets better for me with each viewing.
Yeah, it's an interesting one for sure. It feels like a fable. I remember, I think Mrs. Parker, maybe Equinox,
I like Equinox too.
one of those was probably the first Alan Rudolph that I ever saw, but I really kind of paid attention to who he was after Afterglow.
Oh yeah,
Because
Afterglow is brilliant.
I did love that film, and I also enjoyed Trixie a lot. I even liked The Secret Lives of Dennis because I'm a big fan of Hope Davis and Campbell Scott. And so I thought that was interesting. I have not seen Ray Meets Helen, but you kind of sold me on needing to watch that one. And then I think it was within the last like decade of reviewing, I was sent The Moderns, I believe, to review, and then started watching some of his other ones. I would have seen, like I said, Choose Me sometime in the 90s, but I can't remember when. Remember My Name, I think, is a fascinating movie. And one big takeaway, if you're listening to this and you haven't seen it or you don't know where to start after Choose Me, which is, one of Bill's favorites, be sure to check out Remember My Name, especially if you're a noir fan, because it's just a really interesting movie. It's kind of it's a stripped down noir. These are all very stripped down filmmaking. Like you talked about the Edward Hopper painting of it all. I think it was maybe in Janet Maslin's review of Choose Me where she talked about how the posters on the wall, or maybe it was Kael, it was one or the other,
Oh
talked
yeah,
about
that's the Janet Maslin review. You're
that
yeah.
was Maslin, yeah, where she talked about like the movie posters on the wall kind of commenting on who these people were, and also what was going to happen with some of the characters. Even some of the imagery comes back later. So yeah, he definitely kind of pares everything down. It feels like fables. He said he always felt like he was making the same movie. They're all about love, essentially. Works with the same people quite a bit. I think Carradine is a great collaborator with him. And I'm with you. I think he is a fascinating actor to watch. And being an Altman person, first and foremost, this Choose Me sort of feels like it's almost in concert with his character in Nashville. Like it would be interesting to watch these movies back to back and kind of, see that. Yeah.
Yeah, that and that would be a cool, and I probably have kind of done that in a roundabout way, because I think when I kind of go back and watch these Alan Rudolph movies, it does always make me also want to go back and watch Altman movies.
Yeah.
And he talks about, I mean, every interview you can find with him, he talks about, that the experience of working on those Altman movies just, was the thing for him that, opened up the ways he wanted to tell stories. And you can feel it for sure, even though the vibe is a little different, I'd say, ultimately. And it's funny you mentioned that. I was thinking that rewatching it this time too about the great stories that or the great story that the posters in the background tell, and Choose Me. And I was just rewatching like a Q&A thing from the American Cinematheque screening that you can find on YouTube. It was from, I don't know when it was from, last year or the year before. And the producer, what's her name? Carolyn Pfeiffer, I
Effort,
think,
yeah.
is talking about how they didn't have like a budget to like shoot out in the street or do a lot of things. So mostly you're in rooms in this film.
Yeah.
And she said, but we had a flower budget and we had a poster budget. And I think that, I mean, the posters are incredible, and the paintings on the wall and all
Yeah.
that stuff do really tell the story, or tell another story.
Yeah, kind of the way like they would in Godard movies and Truffaut movies.
Yeah.
Yeah, like the art or the backgrounds. So that is really interesting. I love Leslie Ann Warren. I had just rewatched Clue again, which is one of my favorite movies because I'm going to be talking about it on the podcast again in a few weeks. And so it was cool to see her, at the height of her powers, essentially. Just a fascinating woman to watch in anything in any era, but it was really cool to see her in this era as well.
Yeah, I love that. I was reading that Pauline Kael review I mentioned, and that she talks about her having kind of like this almost like this quality of seeming like an actress from a different era. Like she'll have a Greta Garbo quality one minute, but then feeling very contemporary and looking like Susan Sarandon another minute. And then she uses the phrase that she has acres of eyelids, which I really love. She's so stunning and just fun to watch in this movie. And I love that character, and I love just that, her as the bartender and the owner of that dive bar lounge place. It's so good.
Yeah, and how all of these characters intersect, which is something that you do a lot in your fiction, the intersecting
Yeah.
surprise, like this person knows this person or they're married to whomever, which definitely I did not see the ways all of these characters were going to intersect.
Yeah, and that was a big thing for me. And I think probably, a lot of that comes to me through loving Alan Rudolph's movies, but also through, of course,
All of
Altman.
them.
And I think that probably is, that influence, no doubt, is there on Rudolph from Altman. But I love that, just the kind of Chris. And then really in this movie, it's like everybody is tangled up with everybody else. It's hilarious.
It's kind of like basically a theatrical troupe, essentially. Everyone's sleeping with
Yeah.
everyone, and it's all revolving doors.
And I do, I mean, I love that that's something I also really respond to about this movie, is that he talks about it as a comedy, and a comedy with no jokes, basically. And I think that's a feeling that you do get watching it, which is something that you feel in a lot of his movies often. There's like a kind of almost screwball comedy logic, but there's not like you're not getting big laughs from it or anything, but the situations often are kind of like, screwball soap opera-y kind of stuff. And
Anti-screwball, sort of like this was around the time of One from the Heart being an anti-musical, essentially.
yeah, well, and this has a lot in common. Rewatching it, I think this has a
Those
lot in
movies.
common with Heart. Yeah. I mean, it even looks a little like One from the Heart. And they're both just stunning movies. And they would make a really that would, I think that'd make a really good double feature. I don't know that I've ever heard Alan Rudolph talk about One from the Heart, but I'd be curious to know if it was, I mean, it certainly would have been in the air around that time.
Yeah, I would throw those two together and then maybe add a Hartley for sure.
I'm sure Hal Hartley loves Alan Rudolph. And I don't know. I mean, I was just listening to some podcast interview with Alan Rudolph where, and he talks about this as kind of like the movie of his that people have responded to most positively. And then, there's definitely, I think, Breakfast of Champions, which is a movie he really loves and is really proud of. It was kind of like a big, disappointment for him that people hated it. But this is a movie that he's really proud of and really feels like people love. So that's a good thing.
Absolutely. Well, Bill, do you have any other thoughts on Choose Me before I let you go? I know you definitely, anyone who is listening who hasn't seen it, I'm sure is going to rush right out. So, and
Yeah,
I
no,
learned a lot from you, so I love that. Thank you.
I'm just so glad that, it's definitely like I had this ongoing list of, movies that I really hoped would get good Blu-ray releases. And, of course, whenever you're hoping that for a movie, I think you're hoping that it gets Criterion or if not Criterion, some other great label. And I was just so happy to see them put this movie out, and I hope that it leads to them doing some more Alan Rudolph movies. I know you mentioned Remember My Name, and I hope people who haven't seen that will go out and see that too, though it can be kind of difficult to see.
Very
It's
difficult,
not,
yeah.
but briefly it had popped up on like Tubi but I don't think it's anywhere now. And unless you can catch it on
No.
Turner Classic Movies or something, you can't really see it.
Yeah.
But I hope
So
that
we're putting
was
that
the
out into the universe. Somebody release Remember My Name Criterion if you're listening. Yes.
Yeah, and he also, oh, I do have one other thing. I was this other interview I was listening to. He kind of talks about Remember My Name, Choose Me. Oh, what's the third one? There's another kind of, oh, Welcome to LA. His first kind of major, I guess, movie. So Welcome to LA, Remember My Name, Choose Me, and then I guess Remy Tellin, which is his last movie, is kind of this LA quartet. And, I love some interview I read with him years ago. I can't remember if he used the phrase or somebody used it about his work, but they talked about his kind of Los Angeles of the imagination. And that was
Yeah.
something that really kind of rubbed off on me. And it's definitely the way I think about, the New York that I write about, the Brooklyn that I write about. I'll often just kind of steal that phrase and call it the Brooklyn of my imagination. And I think you really feel that in Choose Me especially. It's this kind of, just this dreamy place, and it feels like a dream in a lot of ways.
Wow, that's a beautiful note to end on. I really appreciate that. Bill, thank you so much for doing this.
Thanks, Jen. Thanks for having me.
Okay, well, I am thrilled to be back with Peter Avellino, who's one of my favorite people, one of my earliest friends from Twitter, like forever ago. I love his writing. He's a brilliant essayist and just such a great person. I always learn something new whenever we talk about movies. And I know you're a big classic movie lover. We've hit, last year we hit My Man Godfrey, which was a lot of fun. So Peter, thank you for doing this. How are you?
I'm very well, Jen. Very well. I'm happy to be here. It's good to see you. It's good to talk to you. I'm always happy to talk about Billy Wilder, even more so than just classic films in general. I love Billy Wilder. He is basically the top
Yeah, I
four.
know he's one of your favorites. What is your favorite Billy Wilder movie?
Right now, I would probably say The Apartment. I
Yeah.
mean, but that. It could be Double Indemnity. It could be Sunset Boulevard. I sort of put those three into like the top tier. And maybe if I haven't put some Like It Hot in those top rankings, maybe that's because of overexposure. Maybe that's a bit of snobbery, not thinking of the comedy ranking so high. Watching the movie last night, I thought it played just fantastic. I found myself really paying attention to the dialogue. I mean, Wilder, and in this case, I.L. Diamond. I mean, there's just some phenomenal dialogue all the way through. The way lines just sort of wrap around back to each other and repeat later on. And it is so funny and so sharp and makes it so enjoyable. So maybe Some Like It Hot would be not quite at the top, but it's pretty close. It's pretty close. I usually say The
Yeah.
Apartment.
I agree with you. I think if I was like pressed on his best film, I would say The Apartment. I know I did like underrated Wilder with Megan Abbott, and we were talking about the ones we watch the most. For whatever reason, I seem to watch Love in the Afternoon. It's not a perfect movie, but I watch Love in the Afternoon quite a bit. She got me back into 1, 2, 3. I had forgotten how great that is. And I think it's so cool what you were mentioning too. You think of him more as comedy or dramedy or the melancholy films that he did, but you forget he made Double Indemnity and Sunset Boulevard and these like staggeringly great exercises in other genres. Yeah.
Staggeringly great is a good way to put it. Yeah, because the latter part of his career was so lemon heavy, shall we
Yes.
say. And the way you watch Love in the Afternoon, believe it or not, I find myself watching Avanti a surprising
I
amount.
enjoy Avanti. Nobody talks about that one.
I won't say it's perfect, but it gives me pleasure. Part of it, I just like movies set on like Italian islands somewhere or
Yes.
something. And I think it's a really lovely film.
I do too.
And
Yeah.
so the last from, you know, from Some Like It Hot on, there's so much lemon, and that is obvious, was obviously a conscious decision. You know, I was just reading another book that in a book that was basically like by the fourth week of production, it was like Wilder and Diamond were like, well, we're just making Jack Lemmon movies. And you know, he's so phenomenal in this film, and they must have clicked with him more than they did with Tony Curtis, I imagine.
Yeah.
Tony
I
Curtis, who's
agree.
really good in this film.
Oh, he's great. Yes. I
He's
mean, I've heard like, and we I'm sure you have too, read personality issues and everything, but this is
Yes.
the first one with Jack Lemmon. And yeah, there's something about the sensibility. Maybe he music to the ear, just the way that he was able to do these lines of dialogue so brilliantly. But I like what you're saying, lemon heavy, because you do have a lot of Jack Lemmon, and then you also have maybe some of the quote unquote lesser films later on, but some we enjoy very much. I think, yeah, Tony Curtis and Jack Lemmon are so good in this. And you can't say enough about Marilyn Monroe. I know they were thinking, why would somebody of her caliber do it? They were assuming it'd be like Mitzi Gaynor, or something. And then when she was interested, she did with she got part of the gross, which was brilliant, brilliant businesswoman. But yeah, it is just, it crackles. It's funny. It's very sexy still to this day. Yeah, it's a great movie. Yes.
As far as Marilyn doing it when it's not the lead of the film and she comes into it, you know, 20, 25 minutes in, you know, maybe she had worked with Wilder before. Maybe it was the quality and the potential of the material, because I think Marilyn is great in general. It's one of those things where she made fewer movies than you probably think, and a few of those movies, I don't think are that
Yeah.
great. Please never ask me to sit through There's No Business Like Show Business again. Please, please,
No,
please.
you're fine. Don't worry. Yeah.
But she, you know, she, of course, the movie becomes much more a Marilyn film because she's there, just like The 7 Year Itch became a Marilyn film because she was in it. That Wilder also did that one. And The 7 Year Itch isn't that great. I've
No,
watched
it
it
isn't.
for some reason, for a movie I don't like that much. I've watched it a surprising amount, and I still don't think it's that great. But the material in Some Like It Hot is so much better. Her co-stars are so much better. She does affect the movie greatly. She gives it this sort of soul. She gives it this sexiness. She gives it her comic touch. And it the movie makes her better. She makes the movie better. She's phenomenal in it.
Yeah. Yeah,
She's
I
phenomenal in it.
agree. There's like a nice blend of sexiness and innocence, which I think a lot of women try to like affect, or they try to like put it on. And she just had it. That was her. And also just, something in the eyes, the way she reacts to everyone, even though, we've all heard the stories of 47 takes or however many
Sure.
takes to do some of these scenes. Whatever scene or take it was, she was definitely on in these moments. Yeah.
And we have the movie, and she's so good that it makes me wonder, you know, if she and Wilder had reunited again, if she had lived, if she
Yeah.
had done Kiss Me Stupid, if she had taken.
Yes.
The female lead in The Fortune Cookie only comes into it in the second hour, but it makes me imagine a rewrite of The Fortune Cookie where she's in the whole movie, and that would be a very dark performance for her. And I just imagine what that would have been like
Yeah.
if she lived and continued to work, because she's that good. I love Kim Novak in Kiss Me Stupid, but I would like
Oh,
to see
yeah.
her version with Marilyn. Yeah,
I agree
absolutely.
with you. Yeah, that would
Absolutely.
be an interesting, alternate
You know,
version.
oh, absolutely. You
Yeah.
know, the movie moves so fast. It's so well structured. You know, it gets this farcical tone right off the bat, you know, being set in 1929 during
Yep.
Prohibition.
Yeah.
And, you know, it has to build up to their first appearance as women, but once it does, it moves like a freight train. And that sort of middle section, the the second act of the movie, where it's just them and Marilyn and Joey Brown, and not worrying about so much plot gangster stuff, is beautiful to me. It's so well structured, so well written. It's so funny, and I had so much fun watching it again.
I know, it's like a nesting doll. Like, it starts out as a gangster picture, and then once they remove that layer, then you're in like a Palm Beach Story, Sturges kind of thing, and then it just keeps becoming something different. And one thing I think I love so much about Wilder is just his love of language, and it kills you because this was not his first language, but he really loves the way that words work, and like you were saying, teasing out these lines that you're gonna hear again later. Also, there's always a rhythm involved that is so unique to him, and in this movie, yeah, you get that big time. Yeah, I
The
mean,
bellhop says, oh,
yeah.
go ahead.
Oh no, I was just gonna say he's also just so famous for those like last lines of movies,
Oh,
at the
of
end
course,
of
of course.
The Apartment and then the end of this. Perfect. Yeah, go for it.
It's perfect. It's perfect. I was going to say the bellhop says to Tony Curtis when she's going into her room, into his room. The bellhop says, pleasure to have you with the organization. And there's a version of that line in like several other Wilder movies, like The Lost Weekend. And you just sense that he likes the rhythm of certain kind of patterns with people. And it just the way you circle around from Tony Curtis saying to Jack Lemmon, just keep saying, I'm a girl, I'm a girl. Then later on, just keep saying, I'm a boy, I'm a boy. And
Yes, yeah, good point.
I was, I was reading that they were rewriting so much of it during production
Oh my
because
God.
they were still determining like what was working with the drag stuff and what wasn't. And the fact that they were rewriting and like keeping all these things in check, how one thing leads to the other, which I'm just amazed by how fast certain things. The movie started in August, started shooting in August, previewed in December, and opened in March. My God, how was that even conceivable?
That's
Yes,
amazing. Yeah.
exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's really fascinating when you think of like the people that turned down, because it was very brave. It was risky, of them to play these roles in drag. And like Jerry Lewis regretted it, he turned it down. But watching it, just like you said about Kim Novak, and it would be interesting to think what this would look like with other people, but I think, it's just hard to separate those leads.
It's
Yeah.
hard to not think of Tony Curtis and Jack Lemmon
I
standing next to
know.
each other because they go so perfect, even though, it's one of those almost disappointing facts to learn that it's not really Tony Curtis's voice when he's Josephine, that it was the voiceover man Paul Frees doing that to get to the correct octave. And I said I mentioned that to somebody very recently, and they really did seem disappointed to learn that.
Yeah, I
It is
know.
kind of a bummer, but the voice, if you listen carefully, you can kind of tell that something does sound a little hollow about it, like it was done in a recording studio. But it goes perfectly with his face in that way. And just the two of them, their banter together, and again, all of their scenes with Monroe, whether it's Tony Curtis doing the Cary Grant voice on the yacht or anything. It's just they are all so ideal in their parts. It flows so beautifully every moment.
It really does. Yeah, I do have to say that the new Criterion looks amazing. The sound is good. I forget that it's not his voice, so I'm glad that you brought that up, because maybe they did kind of get some of the hollowness a little bit out there, but the sound mix is very good. So
Oh, good, good.
that's interesting. Yeah. I think this is such a good kickoff for the Lemon years. And like we said, The Apartment, of course, is the ultimate. Avanti, we recommend. What other performances are we forgetting? Lemon, anything?
Even though it's not a comedy, he's pretty phenomenal in The Days of Wine and Roses, which is probably one of the most upsetting movies ever made,
Oh
but it's
God,
just a few
yes.
years after this, and he's great in it.
Yes.
There are a few 60s movies that are just kind of like they have that 60s comedy tone to them.
I loved Good Neighbor Sam,
Oh, I've never
which,
seen that one. I've never seen
oh,
that
I think you would delight. Yeah,
one.
that is a
Okay. I
really
mean,
fun one.
I've seen How to Murder Your Wife. I've seen Operation
Yeah.
Madball. I've
Operation
seen.
Madball is fun, which
Oh, it
was
is. It is.
actually what got him this role, I read, that Wilder saw Madball and thought, ooh, so
That's
that's
a fun
good.
one. That's a fun one.
Yeah.
No, I, you know, Some Like It Hot and The Apartment are sort of the tops for him, as far as I'm concerned. And they're just about tops for Wilder as well. I mean, to imagine that both of those movies happened within like a year and a half of each other, it's crazy.
I
It's
know.
crazy.
Yeah, he was doing other really interesting dramatic work for other directors, and his career, of course, went on for years, but this whole period, amazing. And when you finally got him with Matthau, such a good team.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know, he I was remembering that his 1973 movie Save the Tiger, which he
Oh,
won the Oscar
yeah.
for, it's a very good performance. The poster for that says Jack Lemmon in his first dramatic role since Days of Wine and Roses, which sounds like hyperbole, but if you look it up, it's like comedy after comedy in the 60s. So it really was. But you know, Avanti is one I would recommend because it's still to this day feels like a lot of people haven't seen that one. Maybe because of the length, because it is kind of long, but it's that Wilder
Yeah, it's
thing where
bittersweet. It's,
it's
yeah, very
bittersweet.
good.
It's like it's one of those things where you can't really cut it because every single plot point connects with each other,
Yeah.
so it all needs to like work that way. It has some lovely things about it.
I
And it has Italian
agree.
scenery, so I
Yeah.
always.
No, I highly recommend that one as well. Well, Peter, I want to thank you so much for doing this. It's always such
You're
a
very welcome.
pleasure.
You're very welcome, Jen. I'm always happy to. Great to talk to you.
I also want to thank everyone for listening, especially my patrons who support the show and help fund my research equipment, film rentals, RSS fees, and more for as little as $1 per month at the Film Intuition Patreon, which is the home base for the show. Other ways you can support the podcast are by sharing, reviewing, and subscribing to Watch with Jen wherever you get your podcasts, and also checking out the cool merch store hosted and created by our talented logo designer, Kate Gabrielle. You can find the merchandise store, including shirts, tote bags, stickers, and more, by visiting filmintuition.com and clicking on the shop link. The show's theme music is Solo Acoustic Guitar by Jason Shaw and is available in the free music archive. Well, until next time, please take care and happy movie watching. This is Jen Johans at filmintuition.com and Film Intuition on social media and Letterboxd. And this is Watch with Jen.